of how this podcast was going to go today. I was going to first come on and talk about Royce da 5'9"'s new album, Layers, which if you follow HipHopSportsReport.com, you've seen that we've already talked about Royce da 5'9"'s upcoming project. It's the best rap album I feel like I've heard in a little while, and I was going to take some time to get into that. But then something happened this week, and so I figured I would kind of switch gears. And so here we are. It's Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Hicks, here on Saturday morning, April 23rd, 2016. And again, go out and get Royce's album if you're a real hip-hop head, because I think you'll enjoy it. But and obviously, we have a jam-packed show today, as usual. Thanks for listening. The website is HipHopSportsReport.com. Hit us on Twitter at Twitter.com/HHSReport. You can do the same with Facebook, Facebook.com/HHSReport. And again, hit us on iTunes. Please go out and subscribe to the podcast. We appreciate you for doing so. And we're also on Stitcher Radio, so go out and subscribe there if you're a Stitcher fanatic. And I've seen the Stitcher app before. It's pretty cool, y'all. So go ahead and check us out on Stitcher if you have that mechanism device on your phone or something like that. You know what I mean? But I wanted to quickly introduce our host, or our co-host, I should say, for this podcast. Friend of the podcast, my man Mark Hicks is back. Mark, how you doing today?
What's up, cousin? How you feeling?
I'm feeling good, man. I'm feeling pretty good for the most part. I, again, wanted to invite you back for the Mark Draft. This is the 2016 NFL Mark Draft edition of the podcast, so all of our frequent listeners are gonna hear your take on the NFL Draft, and I'll get into that in a moment. But the first thing I wanted to do, switching gears again, going back to what I was saying before, I wanted to touch base on the passing of an icon this past week. So we're about 48 hours, I think, removed from the time that Prince passed away. I was never the biggest Prince fan in the world, to be perfectly frank, so I don't want to be one of those people that after somebody passes away, I want to go off the rails talking about how big of a fanatic I was if I really wasn't. Prince was never my favorite artist. His heyday was before my time a little bit, but I was still, you know, Prince was still popping when I was a kid. I was a child of the 90s, you know what I mean? I, 80s baby, child of the 90s, and I was still around for when Prince was still making hits in the 90s and stuff like that, and heard all of his stuff in the 80s and all that stuff. And like I said, he was never my favorite artist. My mom liked him a little bit, but you know, as I got older, I grew to respect Prince on an immense level because of the type of artist that he was, the way that he was proficient in not just writing music but also singing, obviously guitar, drums, and about 20 other instruments that he could play. He wrote all of his own music. He wrote music for other people, wrote many hits for other artists. He was just a savant. He was just a savant and a true musical genius in every sense of the word. I recently was talking to my mom about Prince not that long ago because I had seen him perform on Saturday Night Live. I think it was last season's Saturday Night Live, if I'm not mistaken. And he was on there, and I just happened to be flipping through the channels, and I stopped and saw Prince perform. Never had the pleasure of seeing him in person, but I watched this performance on SNL, and he was jamming, man. He was just killing it. And I told my mother, I'm like, you know, later on, after I'm telling her about it, I was like, man, I saw Prince on Saturday Night Live the other night. He was killing it. Like, this guy is in his mid-50s, and he was just rocking out, and it was an awesome, awesome performance. And I would absolutely pay money to see Prince perform live, even though he wasn't, you know, I wasn't the biggest fan of his. And everybody always likes to make the Prince Michael Jackson comparison or whatever, you know, not that you have to be in one camp or the other, or that you have to be a fan of one and not the other, but I was always a Michael Jackson fan growing up. I love Michael Jackson. Prince, like I said, was somebody that I acknowledged and appreciated, but the appreciation just grew exponentially as I got older and my ear for music got a little bit keener, and I just truly respect what he meant to the world as an artist and as a philanthropist as well, and as a revolutionary in the sense of trying to get his masters back and ownership of all of his music, which a lot of artists still struggle to do and strive to do. He wasn't going to be put down by the labels, and supposedly that is what played into him changing his name to the symbol and being known as the artist formerly known as Prince and all that stuff. Mark, you are a few years older than me, so you can kind of reflect on Prince's heyday back in the 80s and things like that. What do you remember from Prince, especially back from those times?
You pretty much hit it on the head as far as where I look at as far as Prince's and his impact to not only the music industry, but just from the standpoint of just from an entertainment standpoint. He was an outstanding entertainer. So, you know, dating back, you know, his Purple Rain album and the movie basically came out about, I want to say it was like the summer of 84. So I was basically 12 years old. So I was just getting into the teenage years. You know, we, you know, especially, you know, the birth of hip hop and basically, you know, everybody had their own, you know, boombox. You know, I had my first boombox at the age of 14. So I was a little bit later than that. But for somebody who just loved music, Prince was just that type of person where, because you could feel, I think the difference between where, you know, from, you know, a lot of older people would say to the younger people that you don't feel the music like, you know, like we did back in the day. And I think each generation has their own way or own definition of feel. But, you know, because, you know, my parents would say the same thing about their music, you know, when they were growing up. So for me, you know, Prince was right in my heyday. So him and Michael Jackson, you know, those were two, you know, distinct individuals and musical geniuses when it came to, you know, just pop culture in general. And your you know, the mention that you said about him playing all types of instruments, I think that was the cool thing about it, was that he wasn't just put in just one box. He had the ability to do all kinds of things. I heard an interview that somebody had. I think, you know, he went to school with Jimmy Jam or Terry Lewis. I think it was Jimmy Jam he went to school with in Minnesota. And, I mean, he'd known him basically from, like, the time that when they were, you know, real young, when they were kids. And there was another person there who was, like, a famous drummer, and I couldn't, and the name escapes me. I'm sorry about that. But the story said that, you know, Jimmy Jam was, you know, they was in music class together, and they was trying to create a song. And the drummer, like I said, he's a world-famous drummer. He was trying to do the beat, and the person was like, hold on, that's not the beat I'm trying to look for. And he got on the drums. And he killed the drums better than this guy. And I'm saying, to me, when you have somebody that's that deep into music, where they put everything they have, and I think that's the thing that stood out with me with Prince, was that he put everything into his songs, into his music. So from the first time I heard When Doves Cry, and that was like in June, and then the movie came out, and then it finally got into rotation onto cable, and I saw it for the first time, and things like that. I mean, it just, that got me going with Prince as far as his music. But then, you know, as I grew older, I, you know, my taste started, you know, to change a little bit. But I think the core value of what Prince was as far as his impact into the music industry is just huge. And he's going to be sorely missed, because there's very few artists, I think, that really are that deep into just music and just making people feel good by their music. And I think there was one interview that Rolling Stone did where they labeled the top 100 guitarists of all time, and Prince didn't make the list. It was not too long after that he did a concert or performance, and he was killing it at this performance, because he basically like called out the Rolling Stone and said, you know, I'm not the, you know, 100 greatest guitarists of all time. Let me show you, man. There's very few people, and I never had the opportunity to see him live, but there's very few people that, you know, get to me emotionally as far as music is concerned that I would pay to see live. Erykah Badu is another one, you know, just to, you know, go off the beaten path a little bit. I've been to at least three of her concerts live, and she puts on the show. It's about, you know, from the entertainment value. You know, Prince is an entertainer, hands down. So is Michael Jackson. You know, they're revolutionary in that regard, where you can get people from other countries to see the value in your music. Man, that's special, and it's something that not every artist has. So he definitely will be missed.
And these are countries where people don't even speak English.
Exactly.
And they still gravitate to people like Prince. I know ESPN's Bomani Jones has gone on record as saying, like, well, who's the best guitar player of all time? Well, that's Prince. Who's the best bass player of all time? Well, that's Prince.
Who's the best drummer of all time?
That's Prince. Who's the best keyboardist of all time? Prince.
You know, like, Prince
by himself is best. He was like Magic Johnson. If Michael Jackson was Michael Jordan, then Prince was Magic Johnson in the fact that he could play all positions, he could play all instruments, and as an artist and as an entertainer, he really didn't have any weaknesses.
Right.
He was an icon in every sense of the word. I know I heard Colin Cowherd from Fox say this week that somebody had asked Eric Clapton one time, what's it like to be the greatest guitar player of all time? And Eric Clapton said, why don't you ask Prince?
You know what I mean? Like, Prince was just,
he was just incredible. And even for somebody like me, who I would not fashion myself as a fan of Prince, I would not call myself a Prince fan. I don't respect any artist more than him. And, you know, our cousin Pam, shout out to our cousin Pam down in Atlanta. I know she had a story that she shared on social media about how she saw him perform live, and she was on stage playing air guitar with Prince. I guess he pulled her on stage and they was playing air guitar together, and she got to high five him and stuff like that. And that's a memory that's going to stick with her forever. Prince touched a lot of people, man. And so even though we're a hip hop website and a hip hop podcast, I would be remiss if we didn't take time to recognize the greatness of the artist this morning. So
rest in peace, Prince.
Yeah, that's
we're going to miss you for sure.
Making a difficult transition, but a necessary one, into football. So the NFL draft is Thursday. It's in Chicago once again. Mark, you had the opportunity to go to the draft last year. If you ever wonder what it's like to go to the NFL draft, you can search our archives on hiphopsportsreport.com, and you can see pictures from Mark's excursion to Chicago for the NFL draft. That was a lot of fun, as he explained to us on the podcast later on as well. And the draft has been in the news always. They're always going to find a reason to have the draft in the news. So even if there's not a quarterback controversy, they're going to drum up one. But we had two monumental trades at the top of the draft this year. And so before I get into that, I'm going to explain what we're going to do this evening. Or this, I'm so used to recording in the evening. This afternoon, or this morning actually, the mock draft. So as we all know, for those of you who are just hearing this for the first time, we all see mock drafts all the time on the internet, on TV, and wherever else. And we all know that mock drafts are garbage. There's no use for them. They're pointless. All they do is just like to, they just drum up talk and speculation. And it just, they're just designed to get people talking. And they're fun, but there's no value in them whatsoever, because no smart franchise is going to give up any real information as far as their draft plans to some joker on ESPN or CBS. You know what I'm saying? It just doesn't make any sense. So everybody is making these mock drafts based on the quote-unquote intel that they're getting, but the intel that they're getting is inherently bad information by design. And so, therefore, fans flock to the internet to look at these mock drafts that are all based on incorrect information. So what we do here at Hip Hop Sports Report is we have our draft expert Mark Hicks come on the podcast, and he gives us the mock draft, which is, in essence, who he believes each team should select, not who they will select, not who he thinks they'll select, but what they should do with their pick. Sometimes it's trade, sometimes it's a draft selection, but that's kind of the background on the mock draft. So we're going to kick off the 2016 mock draft at the top with the Rams, of course, who made a trade with the Tennessee Titans. The Titans had the number one pick, and they dealt it to the Rams for a buttload of stuff. And now did I call them the St. Louis Rams already?
Yeah, he did.
The L.A. Rams are on the clock, not the St. Louis Rams. They moved from St. Louis to Los Angeles. The Los Angeles Rams are on the clock. Now, let me just say this before we get started, Mark. And I think we can be pretty quick on the Rams, but in the immediate aftermath of the Rams trade, everybody said immediately afterwards, like seconds after the news broke, they said, and all information or all signs indicate that the Rams are going to select Carson Wentz. I never for one second believed that, for all the information that I just said a minute ago, but also because it just didn't make sense to me. I always thought that Jared Goff's destination, once this trade came down, I always believed that his destination was to end up in LA and that Carson Wentz's destination was to end up in Cleveland. How is it that the guy who played in a major college program on the highest level of college football in a major conference, he threw for over 4,000 yards and I think close to 40 touchdowns or something like that. He has been a 3-year starter. He turned the program around from when he was a freshman starting as a true freshman. And he's got the looks. He's got the blonde hair. He's got the polish about him.
Everything about Ronnie Bass.
Yeah, right.
And he's from California and went to school at Cal. It just made sense that he would wind up with the LA Rams. I didn't see how that guy was going to get passed over for number one and wind up in Cleveland, whereas the rough and tumble redheaded kid that played ball in North Dakota in the cold weather was going to somehow wind up in California. Does he sound like an LA guy to you? No. It just didn't make sense to me. So I always figured that Goff was going to go number one. And then as the days have progressed on, all indications are that Jared Goff is going to go number one. So I'm more in the Goff camp over Wentz. If you had to pick and choose between one of the two, I know, Mark, you've gone on the podcast. The last time we had the podcast in Cleveland, you said that you were more in favor of Wentz. So with that being said, what do you think the Rams should do with the number one pick?
Well, what they should do is that, well, without question, they're taking a quarterback. So you don't make the funny thing about the GM for the Rams, I think it's Les Snead, I think he came out immediately and said, well, we still don't know who we want to take. And but you gave up, like, you know, half your draft picks from this season to from next season, and then, you know, a quarter pint of blood and some DNA and all this other stuff to get up there to number one. There is no way in the world you go up there and you don't know who you're going to take. So from
Absolutely.
this standpoint, you know, and this is why, you know, we always have these conversations, you know, Matt picks each other, you know, my brother and your brother, and we all get on the thing. I mean, that's why we were sitting up there saying we just don't believe anything that's going on within the last month before the draft. So for this case here, there is no way around it. They're taking Jared Goff. I think they should take Jared Goff for two reasons. Number one, he did play in the Pac-12, which is an outstanding conference, and he did take that particular team. And as a freshman, their first season they were 1-11, and you know he got them to this past season he got them to 8-5 in a bowl game. So he's dealt with building a program up. He is a California kid. He looks the part. He is the perfect look for a quarterback. So there's no doubt in my mind that that's who Los Angeles is going to take. And even in this mock draft, I put him as the guy that they're going to take. But the most important thing is from a marketing standpoint. You're going from St. Louis back to L.A., the second largest market in the country. You need a splash. And most importantly for the Rams, now this goes back, this also ties the Browns in a little bit, because now, you know, you are reaping some of the rewards from the RG3 trade that they made with Washington 4 years ago. So now you rebuilt the team all the way around. So the only thing that's really truly missing from this team is a quarterback. And you have to be very, very careful in who you select as a quarterback. So in this case, for me, Jared Goff is the guy at one for the Rams. And, you know, the Rams feel that they're a quarterback away. I also feel that they're a quarterback away from really competing in the NFC. So you get the best of both worlds. You get a quarterback, which you desperately need, and plus he's a California kid to boot. So, you know, from a marketing standpoint, there's going to be a lot of people buying, you know, golf jerseys by the time, you know, August rolls around. So, I mean, it's the perfect match, this team at this time with this quarterback. So that's who you're going to take, Jared Goff at one.
And I would agree with that, that's the pick that makes the most sense. He's the most polished guy. Allegedly, Wentz has more upside, but Jared Goff is the guy who has the polish. He has seemingly all the tools, and it would make the most sense for him to come in there and perform for a team that may just be a quarterback away. So, you know, they don't have any receivers in St. Louis, but they do have Todd Gurley, who I believe was the offensive rookie of the year. And they still have a solid defense led by Aaron Donald on the defensive line, who's tremendous. They did lose Chris Long, James Laurinaitis, and Janoris Jenkins, so there may be a couple of holes there, although Chris Long hadn't played well in a couple of years, so I don't think that's a big loss. Maybe replacing Jenkins might, you know, they may have to do some stuff to get that locked up, but it does appear that Goff's destiny was always to wind up in L.A., so I think he has to be happy because he'd probably rather play in Los Angeles for the Rams than play in Cleveland for the Browns or, you know, or potentially some other team that traded with the Titans. So I think that makes total sense, Mark. Now, number two is where it gets interesting, because obviously you and I are both diehard Browns fans as a birthright. And I was thinking about the Browns because at the end of the season, I was actually upset that Tennessee got the number one pick over Cleveland. And I made that known. And the reason I was upset about that was because I knew that anything besides the Browns getting the number one pick was only going to muddy the waters as far as what the Browns as an organization needed to do. If the Browns had the number one pick, there'd be nothing else to worry about besides from picking the number one guy that they think would help their franchise going forward. But that didn't happen, even though, you know, I think they had the same record as Tennessee, but they lost on a tiebreaker and they actually beat Tennessee during the season. So right. Tennessee gets the number one pick, which was a shot in my heart. I was like, ah! No! Because now this means the Browns have to make more decisions. And if there's one thing that the Browns have not excelled in over the course of the last, I don't know, 16 years, is making any type of adequate or accurate football decisions. It's been a nightmare. And I'm going to break down the cycle of losing that has plagued the Cleveland Browns. And I'll try to be quick because, I mean, we're on a podcast and I don't want to take all day with this, but listen here. This is how it works, y'all. So this is how you get stuck in a perpetual cycle of losing, like a hamster or a guinea pig on the little wheel, just running constantly, going nowhere. You have a team that hasn't won in 50 years. They were the last team to win in the city. The city itself has not won a championship in over 50 years, since 1964. Then the team moved in 1995 and returned in 1999, but they kind of got a raw deal on the expansion tip. And this is a legendary franchise. This is like the equivalent of the Boston Celtics leaving Boston. That's what it was like for the Browns to leave Cleveland.
And you laugh
now because of how bad the Browns are. But I'm telling y'all, if you go back and do your homework about the Browns in the 50s and 60s, you will see that they were just like the Celtics of their day. But every couple of years, a new regime comes in, which consists of a coach, a GM, and a president. And either they don't get along, or they're just not successful, or both. And so this happened a few times out the gate because we kind of got a raw deal. We as in Browns fans, I'm speaking as a Browns fan here, we kind of got a raw deal as it related to the expansion draft and building an expansion franchise. And you can do your research on the details behind that. But this tends to keep happening several times where we have to replace the GM, coach, regime, or whatever, president. The team was actually sold at one point as a part of all this, and in part due to fan pressure because Randy Lerner couldn't get us anywhere and this thing snowballed. So how does it happen? Well, this is how it happens. So the new owner comes in and there's the same issue because basically there's a bunch of turnover, and the turnover in the front office and on the roster reflects a lack of stability. So then Cleveland becomes not a desirable destination for top talent. And when I say top talent, I mean free agents. I mean potentially draft picks. I mean scouts. I mean assistant coaches. I mean head coaches. I mean front office execs. I mean presidents. I mean any type of football talent or football evaluators that have any type of clout or talent about them, or any type of cachet that's going to maybe lead to some other people that want to come to Cleveland. They're going to avoid Cleveland like the plague. So then the Browns are forced to hire inexperienced front office people. So what happens then is we just change regimes, right? So we change president, general manager, all that. And if we're changing regimes, that means we have a bad roster. So if we have a bad roster, that means we need more good players. So what's the best way to get more good players? You trade down in the draft because you have a top draft pick, and then you can get more picks packaged and bundled for the draft and maybe in the following year if you trade that higher pick. Now, the draft is designed for bad teams to get better because they're able to land top-end talent. Well, the Browns never land any top-end talent because they're always trading down in the draft. So when you trade down, that means you get less top-end talent, or at least the shot at, potentially at getting less top-end talent. And you're putting all your faith in a front office to make the right picks with all these, with this new bevy of picks that they got. But the problem is that we have inexperienced front office people because we couldn't get anybody legitimate to come in the first place. So then the inexperienced front office leads to poor draft day decisions, poor trades, poor drafts. That leads to a lack of talent on the roster, which leads to more losing. The more losing leads to more impatient fans. And more losing Plus, impatient fans equals more turnover on the roster and in the front office. More losing plus more turnover equals more impatient fans, which equals more turnover and more losing. Or in other words, impatient fans plus turnover equals losing. Or losing plus impatient fans equals turnover.
And the cycle
just repeats itself. That's why every time the Browns, they have a new coach, quarterback, general manager, they get about 2 years. They stink for 2 years. They get fired. They clean house. They bring in a new crew of all inexperienced people, people that have never done it before on any level. And then what do? They have a high draft pick, of course, because they suck. And then they trade back again because each new regime wants to start off with as many draft picks as they can and hopefully use that as an excuse to suck for the next 2 years. But it never works because they always end up getting fired. And then we bring in more inexperienced people. It's this thing just keeps going over and over again. And then on top of that, if you throw in offensive linemen getting blinded by and then attacking referees on the field,
players throwing.
Hold on to this, Mark. Hold on to your helmet here. Unlike Dwayne Rudd, who couldn't hold on to his helmet and cost us a game with 000 on the clock and the Browns had the lead. You have staff infections. You have general managers cursing out fans via email. You have general managers getting fired for unknown reasons. You have quarterback controversies every year. You have top draft picks getting in motorcycle accidents. You have receivers running over and killing pedestrians in their car. You have star players facing suspensions again and again. You have an owner facing an indictment and Johnny Manziel.
There you have it.
There you have it. You package all of that, and that is a synopsis of the Cleveland Browns in the last 15 to 16 years. It turns my stomach, Mark, and they trade it down again for all the reasons that I just outlined. So the Eagles are on the clock, and they're going to take Carson Wentz. Mark, is that what the Eagles should do?
That is what the Eagles should do. And once again, you don't trade up from 13 or whatever it was, 13, from 8, because they went ahead and made a trade with the Dolphins to get 8. You don't trade from 8 to 2 without having one of those quarterbacks in mind. And basically, it came out and said, whichever quarterback falls to us, we'll take. I mean, to me, that just lets me know, first of all, apparently Suspect Sam is not the answer in Philly. That's number one. And then he had the nerve to get upset about the fact that, you know, that they moved up and they're going to take a quarterback. I find that hilarious. I mean, I don't at any point in time thought that Suspect Sam was going to be the guy in Philly. And they were just, you know, trying to help bridge the gap until whoever they have, and in this case it will be Carson Wentz, you know, until he's ready to go out there and actually take the job. This way, at least with Bradford being there, it's not a rush. They also picked up Chase Daniel, too. So there's no rush to start Wentz. They have a chance to have him sit, have him learn the speed of the game, have him get the nuances down. And he's a fast learner, too, so I think that's not going to be the issue. So there's definitely somebody – that's definitely who they're going to take. I wanted to tell you something because, up until, you know, this week, you know, the Browns were sitting in this spot, and I was going to give you an idea about, you know, some things about Carson Wentz. The biggest thing that I love different things about him. And I'll tell you real quickly, you know, the traits that I look for in a quarterback. So there's basically, to me, there's 8 traits of a quarterback. So the first one is accuracy, like I told you last year. Accuracy is important, but it's not just necessarily, you know, just throwing the ball so having the guy catch it. It's about ball placement. It's about putting the ball in an area where his guy can catch and the other team can't, or his guy can't get hurt when making the catch. Accuracy is very key to me. If you're a quarterback that can throw accuracy, that sets you up on a different level than everybody else. Vision also is number 2. That's something that's very important for every quarterback. Intelligence, you got to be a smart quarterback. Difference is with a lot of these quarterbacks that's in the league now, is that they have, some of them have the skills, the physical skills or physical tools to do it, but they're not good upstairs. Mentally, they are a step or two apart from the rest of the elite quarterbacks. So intelligence is very key when you are a quarterback. Arm strength, you definitely have to have arm strength because you got to be able to throw it in tight windows. And sometimes the conditions are not very good on a weather standpoint. So you have to be able to have arm strength to get it across the field. Leadership, you have to be a leader. That's the difference between, you know, having somebody like Russell Wilson and having somebody like Jay Cutler. There's a huge gap in leadership, and nobody's going to rally around Jay Cutler, and that's a big problem. Nope. Pocket presence, is another one for me. You got to be able to stand in the pocket. You got to be able to, go through your progressions and not just be, have happy feet and just, get yourself, start running around all over the place. Then the last two for me is not as big or as important, but it's, it's something that to look for in a quarterback, and that's athleticism and then size, because some of the best quarterbacks in this league, like Drew Brees and Russell Wilson and those guys, I mean, they're not the tallest guy in the world. They're not the biggest guy in the world, but they have all these other attributes which gets them a step above the other quarterbacks in their class. And most importantly, that's what helps them get by in a situation where they're not necessarily the biggest guy and they can take a lot of hits and they can get punished, So it's up to them to learn to read defenses, be able to get rid of the ball quickly, so on and so forth. So Carson Wentz has all these things. The only thing that I had an issue with Carson Wentz is, his level of competition. But most importantly, his ball security, because he had 9 fumbles in the last 2 years. And then he lost 4 of them, basically 6 in 2014 and then 3 last year. So that's the only thing for me. And that goes with pocket presence. You have to be able to be aware of rushers trying to go after the ball, especially in the NFL. They're not necessarily looking to sack the quarterback per se. They're looking to strip the ball and create turnovers. You know what I mean? So that's the one thing he really has to work on. But I think if he gets the time to learn the system, and if he gets the time when he's not being rushed, and you talk about impatient fans, and we have here in Cleveland, but Philadelphia, they're like 1A as far as impatience. They're not going to waste time or give him time. When he goes out there on that field, whenever the case may be, whether it's the injury or whether the front office is or the coaching staff is forcing him out there, they're going to expect him to produce. And as long as they take their time with him, I think he can be a good quarterback in this league.
Here's what scares me about Wentz. So. And actually, the one attribute that I would add to that list, Mark, and that was a very fine list of attributes that all good quarterbacks should have. The last thing I would add to that list is health. You got to be healthy. You got to be in there. And the one thing that, going back to Jared Goff for a hot second, the one thing that scares me about Jared Goff is that he separated his shoulder in college. And it appears as though the separated shoulder is an injury that can easily take place again and again once it's happened once. So we've seen guys like Romo separate his shoulder multiple times broken collarbone, anything like in that area. If it happens once, it seems like it can easily happen again. We saw with Sam Bradford had it happen to him a couple times. I think Roethlisberger had multiple shoulder injuries last year. That anything in that shoulder area, when a guy gets driven into the turf on that shoulder, it seems like once it breaks once, it's more likely to break again. So that scares me about Goff. But Wentz got hurt last year too. He broke his wrist, and it's good that that Wentz is mobile and athletic and everything. But he scares me because he was on a team that was run first. His team was run first. He liked to run the ball himself quite a bit. He's not Mike Vick. You know what I'm saying? He's mobile. He can move around and do some things. Don't get me wrong, but I don't know who they expect him to be from the mobile side of things, like what type of mobile quarterback they expect him to be. I don't know if he's, like I said, he's definitely not a Michael Vick. I don't even know if he's Marcus Mariota or anything like that. So, but I don't think you're going to get that pure pocket passer from Wentz. His delivery looks a little funny to me. It doesn't look as natural as Goff's. And the competition obviously scares me, coming from North Dakota, playing on a powerhouse program, in a powerhouse program that won every game without him when he was hurt. And then he came back in and then they won the championship. But like, they didn't miss a beat when he was out. I don't know if that's the kind of guy you'd want to put in as your franchise quarterback for the future, but that's what the Eagles are going to do. Now, San Diego has the third pick, and they're sitting pretty because most people don't believe that these two quarterbacks are the best players in the draft. I think Jared Goff might be the best player in the draft, but I'm not positive about that. But the Chargers, they're going to be picking from whoever's left. So any and the good thing for them is that they don't have to draft a quarterback right now, even though Phillip Rivers is getting up there. They had a lot of injuries on offense last year. Melvin Gordon sucked all last year. They lost Eric Weddle in free agency. I think he went to Baltimore, if I'm not mistaken. and the other AFC West teams aren't really going anywhere. So that is a little bit troublesome for San Diego. But the good thing for them is that they can pretty much draft whoever they believe is the best player in the draft. So who do you think that player is for the Chargers, Mark?
For looking at their roster, and I'm looking at what they have and what they don't have, I'm gonna give you three numbers. And basically for the Chargers, first number is 4.8, second number is 31, and the third number is 32. So the 4.8 means that the Chargers defense gave up 4.8 yards per carry last year. That's 31st in the NFL, okay? And then as a team, they only had 32 sacks, which is also 24th in the NFL. So I understand, you know, the pressure of, you know, the ability of having to pick the best player in the draft. If you want the best athlete, you could probably take Jalen Ramsey at corner. If you're looking at, you know, the fact that Melvin Gordon didn't do well last year, that Phillip Rivers, was doing pretty well from a standpoint. His offensive line was a little bit shaky. I mean, you could possibly look at the best offensive lineman in the draft. But just for me, you know, they're not going to go anywhere. And I think offensive linemen are, to a certain degree, not necessarily a dime a dozen, but you can still, especially offensive linemen, they're usually, seven to eight really good tackles that you could actually get per, every year in the draft. And I think they could be better off waiting until the second round to address that. So for me, I mean, if you want to shore up your running game and also improve your sack total, you need somebody who can get off the edge and who can play in that 3-4 concept like they have down there. So for me, DeForest Buckner is the guy for me for the pick at three, because not only is he a guy who can get you a lot of pressure and put pressure on the quarterback and get sacks, but he's also the type of guy who can help stop the run. Now they picked up Brandon Mebane or in the offseason as defensive tackle, but they need more help up front to try to to stop the run. And until they stop the run, I mean, they're always, Phillip Rivers gonna always have to throw to get back in games, and he's gonna get himself killed. So the first thing for them, they need to shore up that defense, and the defensive line is where they need to go. So DeForest Buckner is my pick at three.
DeForest Buckner is listed as 6'7", 291 pounds.
It's ridiculous.
He is a monster.
Ridiculous.
That guy is like Godzilla on the defensive end. Like that's scary.
I'd hate to have that coming at me. He could probably bat down quite a few balls at Oregon last year. Well, actually, the last 2 years he had a combined 30 tackles for loss, which is a lot. And he finished last season with 10.5 sacks. So he seems to have the raw tools to be a beast at the next level. And San Diego, I mean, they've had some good defensive players here and there, like Weddle and like a few other guys, but they haven't had a dominant defensive player since Junior Seau, I don't think.
Nope.
And so, I mean, maybe DeForest Buckner could be that guy for them. The Dallas Cowboys pick fourth. They're in an interesting spot because I think they probably would have won their division had Tony Romo and Dez Bryant stayed healthy all season, but they didn't. And so now they're looking at the draft here, and they probably don't need to go offense. There's some speculation that they could go running back and get Ezekiel Elliott in there, as they lost DeMarco Murray last year to Philadelphia, and now that Murray was gone, they had to replace him with Darren McFadden, who was okay considering he's Darren McFadden, and Joseph Randall, the felon himself, was in the backfield for part of the year. So it just wasn't a good look for their running game. But historically, you can find decent running backs later in the draft, and if their offensive line is as good as it's purported to be, then maybe it doesn't make a ton of sense to go running back at four for them. It seems like defense might make more sense for Dallas again, although their defense has improved tremendously over the last 2 years. They did have Randy Gregory, I believe, in last year's draft, and him and DeMarcus Lawrence, both talented young players, but I think are both facing suspension.
Right.
And then there's Greg Hardy, who he's doing his Greg Hardy thing, so I don't know how reliable that is. It seems like most people have either Ezekiel Elliott or a defensive end going there, possibly Joey Bosa. But then there's rumors that Joey Bosa may have failed a drug test, and so that may be knocking his draft stock down. So do the Cowboys want to roll the dice on another troubled defensive player. I don't know if that's the right move for them. So what do you think Jerry Jones should do down there?
All right. So I'm gonna preface this by saying, you know, I want to thank three entities for my mock draft this year, because I've had to change it three times, and that's the Los Angeles Rams, the Cleveland Browns, and Joey Bosa, because quite honestly, Joey Bosa would have been the perfect fit here at Dallas. I know Jerry Jones is always looked at talent over the problem per se. So I mean, I could. And it is a slight possibility, but I just don't think that, right now, especially with all the issues he had with, like you just mentioned, with Hardy and Gregory and all these other guys, that he can take another, defensive end, this time, with possible drug problems, And we talked about this last week, the last podcast, they was talking about, Joey Bosa being a sure thing. And he is a sure thing. He's a sure thing from a talent standpoint, but, this type of thing and the fact that he was labeled as a partier going into the draft, this type of thing is really concerning to me. So Dallas is in a position where they can take what in my opinion is the best athlete in the draft. Jerry doesn't shy away from big splashes. So for me, everybody states that Jalen Ramsey may not only be the best athlete in this draft, but also the best player in his draft. So I don't personally think he gets past three, in reality. I think San Diego may just take him, but for the purpose of this mock draft, because I think, who they should take, I think Dallas is in the position where they can take, the most explosive player that's coming out of this draft, and then you can not put him at corner, you can have him return kicks and, punts and things like that, and, you just open up a whole different dynamic. So if he gets past three, there's no doubt in my mind that Dallas takes Jalen Ramsey, the corner from Florida State.
And Jalen Ramsey is a dynamic athlete. The criticism there is that they don't know. They don't know if he's a safety or a corner.
Exactly.
Which could be a problem, or it could be a blessing. Like sometimes I always think that's weird when they do that with drafts. They do the same thing in the NBA where they talk about this guy as a tweener. Like, oh, what position is he? Is he a small forward or is he a power forward? And it's like, I don't know that matters anymore if the skill set is right. Like, if the skills are there, who cares what the size is? Look at Draymond Green. They said the same thing about Draymond Green. He fell all the way to the second round, and you could argue he's one of the 20 best players in the league right now. So versatility is always a good thing as far as I'm concerned. If they can do a little bit of both, and they can do both well, then by all means, who cares if he's a safety or a corner? Maybe you can put him at safety, and if you get in a pinch, if your safety gets hurt, you can move him from corner to safety. If your corner gets hurt, move him from safety to corner. You can play him at the nickel maybe. There's a lot of different options, and he is such a fabulous athlete that to me, he's gonna help whatever team he goes to. So
you just got to find room on the football field for him. So, that's what you got
to do. Right, and again, I don't know how many more headaches Jerry Jones is willing to take on, so it seems like he might just want to avoid all that. Bosa, don't quote me on this drug thing, y'all. I don't know if that's true, but it was rumors that he may have failed a drug test in leading up to the draft, and so if that is in fact the case, then that could affect his stock. There's still rumors out on there's an article posted on NFL.com 17 hours ago that says that Bosa is still going to get strong consideration from the Cowboys. So who knows? He might end up there, but we do know that Bosa got suspended last year for something that wasn't, I don't think it was drug related, was it? Or was that a drug related?
I want to say it was. Wasn't it Virginia Tech game the reason why he was suspended? Wasn't it because he was for, I would say for weed. I'm not sure, but I want to say it was something of that nature.
Yeah, there was a bunch of guys that got suspended for that game.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I mean,
How much baggage is too much baggage? And you already got to deal with all these injuries and I don't know if Greg Hardy's going to be back in the fold next year, but you're going to have to deal with that if he is. And, you got Randy Gregory. Like, just take Jalen Ramsey if he's there. I agree with you. That just makes the most sense to me.
Go ahead.
Real quick, and Alfred Morris was picked up by the Cowboys, too. So that shores up their running game, too. So they don't have to worry about getting Ezekiel Elliott at four.
Okay. Jacksonville at five. I like what the Jags are doing, man. Their offense is moving in the right direction. I didn't like Blake Bortles coming out the draft. I thought that he was a little bit overhyped, and you know, they always want to hype up multiple quarterbacks at the top of the draft. And just that's kind of how I feel about Carson Wentz. I don't think Carson Wentz is that good. I think that he's a large product of hype, in my opinion, just like they did with Blaine Gabbert some years ago when Cam Newton was coming out. They had to put somebody up against, you know what I'm saying? They had to have Andre the Giant to go with Hulk Hogan. Like, they had to have, they gotta have more than one guy. So they had to throw Blaine Gabbert in there. And we talked about that. I talked about that on the All Football Show way back in the day with my buddy Adam Clark. You know what I mean? But Jacksonville, Bortles, I think he can be a good quarterback if he gets his head on straight. He makes a lot of dumb decisions, but the talent seems to be there. The passing game is great. They drafted the kid from Alabama last year and to play their running back position, T.J. Yeldon. They signed Malik Jackson in the offseason from Denver. And they brought in Prince Amukamara for the secondary. Dante Fowler, who was their top three pick from Florida last year, got injured way before the season started. He should be back this upcoming season. And they still have the chance to get another top-end defensive player with this pick. So I would imagine that's the route they're going to go. They could go offensive line, but I doubt it. I would imagine that they're going to go defense here, especially with the fact that they have a defensive coach there in Gus Bradley. So, Mark, what do you got Jacksonville doing?
Well, they need. I agree with you because I like what Jacksonville's doing. They're really putting together a good roster. And for me, it just makes sense that they get another dynamic weapon for Gus Bradley's defense. So, and the previous mock draft that I had before I heard about Bosa, actually I had Jalen Ramsey falling to Jacksonville, which would have been outstanding. You know, they would have been doing cartwheels down in Jacksonville to have Jalen Ramsey fall to them. But because Jalen Ramsey went before them, despite his injury, and he just has, I just read something yesterday that he's been cleared from his injury. To me, the most dynamic defensive player at that spot is Miles Jack, the linebacker. From Notre Dame. So my thing is, UCLA. He's a dynamic football player, and he will immediately upgrade that linebacking core. And with him, Dante Fowler, they picked up Malik Jackson, and Tayshaun Gibson from the Browns. You have the foundation for a very, very good defense, man, a very dangerous defense. I love Miles Jack. I love Miles Jack when he was coming out. I actually thought of the Browns, like, even trying to look at him a little bit at two. But, you know, because of his injury, that scared me a little bit. But at five, you know, you saw with Dante Fowler, they're willing to wait. They're willing to wait these guys out, especially if they're talented enough. It's not something where, you know, he's, you know, doing something that he's, violating the substance abuse policy or anything like that. Now, this is just strictly injury. And if he's medically sound, he's definitely a guy that's worth taking in the top. He has top five talent. So Miles Jack is the pick for me at five with Jacksonville.
Some people have Miles Jack rated as the top player in this draft. So if Jacksonville can get him at five, like you said, I think they're going to race to the podium to get him. He's 6'1", 245. He did have a knee injury in September. So that maybe is kind of holding him back a little bit. But if his knee is right, I think that he can be a great player potentially. I think he – did he play running back in college too for a little bit? Right, this dude is – he sounds like just an athlete, man. Like, I think if Jacksonville can get him, they're going to get him. And, man, look out for Jacksonville in that division, man, that weak AFC South division. Jacksonville might be on the doorstep of something special. Baltimore at six. Obviously, Joe Flacco got hurt late in the season. I don't even know if he's going to be ready for the start of the next season. But, I think Baltimore would be doing if Jacksonville's doing cartwheels to get Miles Jack. I think Baltimore's going to do backflips. Ozzie Newsome is going to do backflips to the telephone to take Miles Jack to go along with C.J. Mosley if he's there. Because I think that they still wanted to shore up that defense. I think Baltimore has that identity. They had that history with Reed and Lewis and those guys, and they want to get that defensive identity back. And so I think they're going to want to go defense if they can. If it's Miles Jack, I think that's what they would do. But if not, as in the Mark draft, he's not available. So what does Ozzie do there?
Ozzie's still going to be dancing around the war room because, you know, quietly, Laremy Tunsil has dropped to him. And the fact that Joe Flacco got hurt means they need to shore up their offensive line anyway. And offensive tackle is one of their key needs. You know, I would agree with you. If Miles Jack was there, you know, Ozzie Newsome will run to try to get him because I think he could be a difference maker on his defense and a building block a la, you know, Ray Lewis when they drafted him. But Larry Mitunzel, if he's, you know, in this case, Ozzie Newsome's going to be doing all kinds of backflips and dancing around the war room if this guy falls to him. In this case here, he does. So that's what I'm taking. I'm taking the best offensive lineman in this draft to help protect the blind side of my quarterback or whoever's playing quarterback for me is essential. So that's the guy I'm going to take.
Yeah, Larry Mitunzel, 6'5", about 300 pounds, out of Ole Miss. Very talented Ole Miss. Ole Miss has got some real players coming out of this year's draft class. And Larry Mitunzel is going to go first out of all of them. And he was the guy who was projected to go number one when Tennessee had the number one pick. So nobody was more upset about that trade than Larry Mitunzel and Larry Mitunzel's agent. Like, they had to be pissed because he may have fallen from 1 to 6 in the draft because of that deal. But he could still go as high as 3rd, I think. I think that's still possible. So we'll see how that plays out. And let's all take a quick second to laugh at the Baltimore Ravens for picking up Trent Richardson. They did that.
Good luck. That's all I got to say.
Like, he's going to take the field on Sunday with the rest of the running backs, and I'm going to be like, what are those? That looks like Trent Richardson. Why would you do that? Although, knowing the Browns' luck, he's going to turn into freaking Jamal Lewis overnight. The Ravens' Jamal Lewis, not the Browns' Jamal Lewis. Picking 7th, San Francisco. They got Chip Kelly in there. They somehow still have Colin Kaepernick in there. I don't know what that relationship is going to be like with Kelly and Cap. I don't know what Cap's relationship is with management. I don't know what Trent Baalke's relationship is with anybody because he doesn't seem to get along with anybody. Even though Harbaugh's a nut, Trent Baalke seems like he could be equally off his rocker. And Chip Kelly's going to be trying to probably bring some of that Oregon offense thing that didn't quite pan out in Philly out to Northern California. So there's also been a lot of speculation that the Niners might trade this pick. So what do you think that San Francisco does at 7? Or what should they do, I should say?
Well, I think they possibly could trade down from this because, quite honestly, I think if Chip Kelly had his way, he probably would want to get a quarterback, and most importantly, he probably would want to get Goff. And I think he was hoping that, you know, the board would have stayed where it was, and the Browns would have taken Carson Wentz, and then he had a chance to move up and grab Jared Goff. That's what I think he was hoping. Since that didn't happen, to me, you know, they should stick with what they have. At least see what Colin Kaepernick does in Chip Kelly's offense. I would love to see how that would work, because he needs a dynamic offensive mind to help him get back to where he was. He really suffered when Harbaugh left. And in order way, also another way to do that is he has to be protected. So they're good at left tackle. They're good at left guard. They picked up Zane Beatles as another guard position, but they still need a right tackle. And to me, the best right tackle or right tackle prospect in this draft is Ronnie Staley. And if San Francisco stays at 7, which I think there's a slight possibility that they will, that's who they should take to shore up that offensive line, to see what they have in Kaepernick. I wouldn't trade him out of there, and I wouldn't definitely not start Blaine Gabbert as my starting quarterback. I'm going to stick with Kaepernick, and so the best way I think I can do is protect him and then start working on weapons after that.
The only hesitancy I have with that is that doesn't sound like a Chip Kelly kind of move. And not that Chip Kelly's going to be controlling the board, because we know that his draft and front office player personnel privileges have been revoked after his tenure in Philadelphia, rightfully so. Right. But, you know, we know Chip's not going to be pulling the trigger on this pick, but for Chip Kelly to move into San Francisco and take on that job and then have them get a tackle with their first pick. I know you said a trade is possible. It doesn't seem like something a Chip would do, but again, it's not Chip's call anymore because he blew it in Philly. So word to my man, Master Ace with the Eagles. We'll have to have him back on the podcast sometime soon. So now the Browns again are on the clock at 8. So here's the thing. I've ranted a lot about the Browns already this morning, and there is still speculation that they could even trade down for number 8, which is amazing to me. Like, amazing to me that they could still trade down yet again. Well, if that's the case, I'm gonna cite ESPN Cleveland's Tony Grossi, an article that he wrote this week about the Browns' history trading down. So check this out. So the Browns traded down the first time, I guess, in recent years, 2009. Eric Mangini was running the show way back then. That was about 10 coaches ago. Eric Mangini was running the show in 2009. They had the number 5 pick in the draft. He traded back 3 times. He traded back from 5 to 17, 17 to 19, 19 to 21.
Ultimately, he ended up...
And they took Alex Mack, who was a Pro Bowl caliber center, but didn't lead to any wins. Maybe not through any fault of Alex Mack, but that just is what it is. We didn't win any more games with Alex Mack than we would have if we didn't have Alex Mack. And we also ended up, from all those deals, the Browns also ended up with David Vicune, Corey Francis, James Davis, and passed on the likes of Brian Arakpo, Jeremy Maclin, and Clay Matthews.
Wow.
2011. This was Mike Holmgren, Tom Heckert. Oh, boy.
There you go.
This is the infamous one. This is the one that stands out above the rest. This is when the Browns had the 6th pick in the draft, and Julio Jones fell in their lap, and they needed a receiver, and they didn't take him. In fact, they traded back with Atlanta. They got a lot for that pick, but ultimately they ended up they targeted Phil Taylor with the pick, but they had to move back up from Atlanta's 27 spot to get Phil Taylor. So they moved from the 6th pick all the way back to 27, then moved up. Then they had to trade up to get Phil Taylor, and he had to trade a 3rd-round pick to do that. Now, with the extra picks they got, who did the Browns get? They got Greg Little.
Oh, my God.
They got Brandon Whedon. B. Weeds, BW3. And they got my favorite, your favorite, and your son Terrell's favorite, Owen Marisic.
Owen Marisic. Oh, God. Oh, my God.
And then one of those picks that they also got was used the following year to move up to take Trent Richardson.
So,
And so if you're wondering who the Browns passed on, just a couple guys you might have heard of, J.J. Watt, Robert Quinn, Ryan Kerrigan. and then the pick that they traded to bounce up to get Phil Taylor, that pick with Kansas City, Kansas City took Justin Houston with that pick. So, yeah. And then 2014, this is Ray Farmer, Mike Pettine era. Are you guys seeing how bizarre this is? They knew that Josh Gordon was going to get suspended. They knew they needed a receiver, and they still traded the pick when Sammy Watkins was staring them in the face.
Yep.
They ended up moving back up a spot to get Justin Gilbert, of all people.
Yep.
And then they used that 1st-round pick that they got from Buffalo in the Sammy Watkins deal to take Cam Irving last year, who had a horrendous rookie season. They used an extra 4th-round pick that they got from the Buffalo trade to take Vince
Melee,
who didn't make the roster. And of course, the Browns also passed on Khalil Mack, Mike Evans, Odell Beckham Jr., and Aaron Donald. So,
I mean, like,
you cannot be any worse at the draft. I promise to God, as God is my witness, Mark, you and I could have done a better job drafting for the Browns since 2009.
Since 1999.
And I am not exaggerating. I am not exaggerating. Me and you could have done better than all of these guys have done put together. Because the only guys that are left from all these deals that are still on the roster is Justin Gilbert and Cam Irving.
That's all we have as a result of all these deals. And they traded down
again. And they did it again this year. And they might trade down again from number 8. RG3 is going to have the keys now, Mark. But what do you think they should do? I mean, Ezekiel Elliott's on the board. Joey Bosa's still on the board. What should the Browns do?
Well, I'm going to tell you this. And I was going to do this. When they first traded down, for the first trade down to 8, my initial thought was, okay, what did they really need? The fact of the matter is that by trading down, yeah, they accumulate more picks because it'll help their transition if they draft right. You know, that's always the big if. If they draft right, they'll be able to help fill a lot of holes a lot quicker. I think RG3 is still a damaged product, but RG3 was at his best when he had a dominant running game. When he came in his rookie year and he won Offensive Rookie of the Year, people forget that he had a 1,600-yard running back by the name of Alfred Morris, who was drafted in the same draft as he was. And even though running backs, like we've talked about this before, as long as these guys, you know, that are coming in who are can't-miss guys, they actually perform, then the value of the running back goes up as far as using him as a first-round pick. At this point in time, I'm still scared of Joey Bosa. Even if he falls there, they just dealt with Josh Gordon and he just dealt with Johnny Manziel. They cannot, if this thing is true with Bosa, I mean, he's going to be picked if he's been cleared of this stuff, and or if somebody rolls the dice, he's going to be taken long before the Browns get there. But for the purposes of this draft, they need an offensive weapon. They have no offensive weapons. Hugh Jackson's his offense is based on a power running game. You can't have a power running game with guys like Duke Johnson and Isaiah Crowell in the backfield. The best three down running back in this draft is Ezekiel Elliott. They need quarterback, they need wide receiver, hell, they need any offensive weapon you can possibly get. And to me, he is the best offensive weapon in this draft, hands down. Because not only is he able to run for you, he is able to block for you, he's able to catch the pass out of the backfield. He is what the Browns should have went for when they traded up to get Trent Richardson. Trent Richardson should have been that type of back, and he never was. And the thing about Ezekiel Elliott, he makes your offense a lot better. And he wants the ball. And if you just have a power running game instead of doing zone blocking schemes, all this other, try to be creative and cute on offense, he is the guy that's going to help RG3 maturate. Whenever they decide to get their quarterback, he's going to help that quarterback along. There was rumors about them going and getting Paxton Lynch at 8. Man, oh, my God. I'm telling you right now, Berea will burn down if they go and draft Paxton Lynch at 8. Or if they trade down, I'm telling you, or if they trade down to get Paxton Lynch. I mean, at some point, like you mentioned, you're up there at the top of the draft for a reason, because you stink and you don't have talent. Why do you keep passing on potential top 10 talent to get a bunch of guys that's just like everybody else, or find that quote unquote diamond in the rough to prove that you're the smartest guy in the room? Stop overthinking it. Get the guys who have talent, and the more talented guys you have, then it will start translating into wins. It's just that simple. And you can't just keep trying to trade down to prove that you're the smartest guy in the room, because eventually you're going to find out that you're not that smart, and then you're going to be dumb enough to get yourself fired and then be in the unemployment line trying to find another job.
Well,
here's my thing. Overthinking that.
Yeah, here's my thing with Zeke, though. And so I agree with everything that you just said. We're talking about no team has been in more need of skill position players or help than the Cleveland Browns. The Browns have been the slowest team in the NFL by far since they come back in 99. They never have any burners. And when they do have a burner, they let him go like they did Travis Benjamin. And you notice he was the only game breaker they had on the roster last year. You know, Brian Hartline is a good possession receiver. He wasn't scoring no touchdowns. Travis Benjamin was scoring touchdowns. Why? Because Travis Benjamin's fast as hell. That's why. So, Ezekiel Elliott, taking offensive linemen, quarterbacks, and defensive players out of the equation, just strictly looking at skill position players, Ezekiel Elliott, across the board, is the highest rated player in the draft. And I would be happy under the circumstances. I would be happy with that pick if the Browns made it. Now, and I think it'd be a good way to get the fans back on their side too, the fans that are upset that they traded down again. Here's the flip side, though. Two things. Number one, Zeke is a running back, and running backs going high in the draft has kind of been proven to not so, with the exception of Todd Gurley last year, has not really panned out so well for a lot of teams. And with the Browns having all these analytics-based people in their front office now, I would be surprised if they valued running back this high in the draft. The other thing is that in spite of Ezekiel Elliott having one of the great running back careers in Ohio State history, which is saying something, when I look at Zeke's highlights, they all look the same pretty much, with the exception of some of his runs in his legendary national championship game. They all look the same. They hand him the ball. He makes one cut. There's a massive hole. He sprints through it, and he just outruns everybody. That's how all of his long TD runs pretty much looked. So the question I have is it possible that a lot of his success came because of those large holes that he got from the offensive line, and after that, it was basically just a foot race? But if he's not just getting into these all-out sprints with the defense, how successful is he going to be at the next level? That's my only concern. I don't even know if that's a fair criticism, Mark. You might disagree with that, but
yeah, I think that's a fair criticism of, let's say, for example, Trent Richardson when he came out. That my brother and I we always had this issue with Trent Richardson was because he had massive holes. He would run behind Chance Warmack every single time and have these massive holes that he ran through. And a lot that's where a lot of his runs came from. I think with Zeke is the guy, is the kind of guy. He just has outstanding vision. Like you mentioned, he has that one cut thing where he follows his blockers very, very well. If you ever like watch it, you know, from the backfield angle, when you watch Ohio State. I mean, he almost anticipates where his guy is going to be, and then he makes his cut based off of that at first initial move, and it's awesome to watch because, you know, Todd Gurley that's what makes Todd Gurley special too, because he sees that hole and he anticipates it, and he just takes off and runs right through it. And I think with Zeke, he's not as fast as Todd Gurley, but at the same time, he anticipates it very, very well. And I think that vision, that unique vision, is so key for a running back. And I just think Duke Johnson is a change of pace guy, so I think that helps, you know, as far as giving, you know, Ezekiel Elliott a spell. And Duke is such a dynamic pass catcher that you can split him out wide. There's times when you can actually have them both in the backfield, which would be incredibly awesome, you know, for the Browns against defenses. Now they're going to have to actually think a game plan for the Browns, which that never happens. And I think with Zeke, I think he has that vision. He's the complete package. I think that's the main reason why I would take him at 8, because I agree with you. You know, until more running backs, you know, show off like that, you know, you're not going to get guys to take him in the first round. And I don't think the Browns, you know, probably won't take him. They probably will do something stupid and try to trade out again. But, you know, for me, they got to take impact players.
Zeke is absolutely an impact player. You pair him with RG3, Gary Barnage, who went to the Pro Bowl last year. And if they take a receiver, whether it's Dotson or the Fuller from Notre Dame or Michael Thomas from Ohio State or somebody else with that 32nd pick, then we have a framework of a passable offense. To be honest, though, I would not expect the Browns to take Ezekiel Elliott at
number 8. I wouldn't either.
I would expect something else.
In the interest of time, 9 and 10. So we'll do it together real quick. Tampa Bay is the 9th pick. You know, their offense was solid last year. Defense needs work, but they dumped Lovie Smith out of nowhere, and then they moved on and got Dirk Cutter, who's the offensive coordinator from Atlanta. So I could see them going offensive line maybe with that pick. And then at 10, we have Tom Coughlin, who left the New York Giants, and the Giants stunk. That's how they're in the 10th spot. Ben McAdoo's now the coach. They lost Prince Amukamara, as we mentioned, but they did sign Janoris Jenkins, and they gave Olivier Vernon $52 million in guaranteed money for some reason, and even though he only had 7.5 sacks last year, playing opposite Cameron Wake. So Olivier Vernon's agent, you the real MVP. You know what I'm saying?
But
what do you think those two teams do in those two spots, Mark?
So the Bucs energize it, but even though they both have offensive head coaches, I'm going defense with both of these guys. The Bucs need a quarter badly. I mean, to the point where they need to see if they can get Ronnie Barber to come back, and they really need a corner. Vernon Hargreaves is my pick at corner from Florida. They look at him as probably a better cornerback than Jalen Ramsey is. For the Giants, they want a great defense again. You know, JPP goes out and blows like half his hand off with fireworks. They need to rebuild that defensive line. Like you said, they got Olivier Vernon, they got Damon Harrison for defensive tackle, but they still need another defensive end. And he also has been cleared again. You know, it's a concern because he's been injured. But Shaq Lawson, to me, is the best defensive end that's left here. So I'm taking Shaq Lawson for the Giants from Clemson at 10.
I think with the caveat that Joey Bosa is not being considered due to his off-the-field issues.
Exactly. If he's there, they're going to take him. But I wouldn't touch Joey Bosa with a 10-foot pole right now. I just wouldn't.
Ouch. All right, so quick recap. Number one, this is, again, the Mark Draft 2016. Mark says the Rams should take Jared Goff, number one. Eagles should take Carson Wentz, number two. San Diego should take DeForest Buckner, number three. The Cowboys should take Jalen Ramsey, number four. The Jags should take Miles Jack, number five. Baltimore should take Laremy Tunsil, number six. San Francisco should take Ronnie Staley, number seven. The Cleveland Browns, who traded down. The trade-down Browns should take Ezekiel Elliott at number eight. Tampa Bay should take Vernon Hargreaves from Florida at number 9, and the Giants take Shaq Lawson, number 10, from Clemson. Mark, we're pretty much out of time, man, but thank you so much for joining us again for yet another successful Mark Draft. We're going to see some more fireworks, I think, between now and the draft. I would not be shocked if the Browns traded down again, and I do believe that the New England Patriots should still have a first-round pick because obviously they were robbed and penalized for nothing.
Thank you all for joining us, though.
On the preseason podcast of the year, Mark Hicks, thanks for joining us again for the Mark Draft. We'll do it again for the NBA Draft, of course, as we always do. Make sure you check out the podcast on iTunes and on Stitcher Radio. Go ahead and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. HipHopSportsSupport.com is the website. We signing off, y'all. This is your man, Jay Hicks. Rest in peace. Prince the God. Peace.